now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Jim Russ sitting in for Dr. Schertz, who is away on business today, and this is the best of Tech Talk. We will have all the stuff you expect from us, the mailbag, profiles in IT, tech news, and your chance to win some free food. So we start now by answering your letters here on the best of Tech Talk.
Right now, it's time for...
Hang on, Doc. I put the wrong guy in the machine. Mr. Big Voice is here.
Mr. Big Voice. Mr. Big Voice, you come in the room, please.
You know, Mr. Big Voice, he's been away for a while, so he's going to tell
There's
us
There's a letter in your mailbox.
There he is.
You know, Mr. Big Voice, you're going to have to come in the studio. You can't be sitting in there drinking coffee
he's
all morning.
Starbucks and...
Yeah, you know, the guy's just goofing off too much. I haven't been around, so I guess he's not used to
the past 2 weekends asleep.
He's not used to working, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, we have an email from Andrea. Mm-hmm. Dear Tech Talk, I was on Craigslist.
Ruh-roh.
And chatted with someone about meeting, probably some guy.
Yeah.
Well, after I chatted with him a while, I discovered that he was married, and his wife was out of town, and he didn't want to send a picture of what he looked like, and so I thought perhaps I shouldn't meet him.
This sounds like a wise move.
That's right. But the problem is, he's now bothering me via my email because he has my email account. Now, he only knows my email address, but now I'm worried. Can he locate me with my email address, and what should I do? Thanks, Andrea. Well, Andrea, I think you made the right decision by not meeting him.
Yes.
Now, as to whether he can track you down with your email address just depends on how careful you have been.
Yeah.
If you've been on any of these chat groups and you've entered any information in them where you've put down your email address along with your name and any other data, then that could be found when he simply searches for your email address. So what I would do immediately, Andrea, is I would go to the computer, go to Google, put in your email address and search to see what comes up. And if you can't find anything, neither can he.
This is a good thing.
But if he can. But if you find any information linked to your email address that you don't want him to know, then you've got a problem. That means if you can find it, he can find it.
Really, the only thing you can do at that point is abandon that email account and
he'd still find it, and so the information is there. So people don't realize they can be on multiple different sites and make comments, and maybe they'll not put their name here, or they'll put their address there, or they'll put their email. And the problem is, if you link all these various areas, various sites together, you can get a full profile. Many times people don't realize that they'll go on to Facebook and give some information, then they'll go on to MySpace and give other information, and someplace else give more information. And each place, it's incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put it all together, you can get a profile. And so I hope you haven't been too open with your information, Andrea. Otherwise, he can track you down.
That's good information for the rest of us who are out there in cyber.
That's right. Always check your email account. And it could be that when you go on to Craigslist and want to just talk to people, maybe you should create like some throwaway email account, some Yahoo account that you don't use for anything except for that.
That's a very good idea.
And then that's all they have, and it's a throwaway account, so then you just trash it and create a new Yahoo account. But don't use your account that you use
for most
of your business. Yeah, for your real stuff. We not only have emails, but we also have Facebook comments.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Kathy Skoog commented on the Facebook. She said, at the end of the show last week, you were discussing passwords with voicemail mobile accounts. I've got a Verizon service, but since getting my iPhone, I've never been prompted for a password when accessing voicemail. I was always prompted with the previous phone. Went to iPhone settings and nothing to turn on, only to change the voicemail. Would you please address this? In the meantime, I'll check it out further. Thanks. Well, your iPhone could be storing the password and then sending it automatically when you log in, so you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the initial voicemail password is set to be the last four digits of your phone number, which, of course, everybody would know if they call you.
Right.
So it probably would be wise to change it. So just go ahead and change your voicemail password. That would be what I would recommend. Then she went on, and then she commented. We had a kind of a conversation. Then she went on and said she said that years ago it was critical that voicemail was password protected because people could hack into your account and make phone calls. But that hole's been closed up now. And so if I only get non-sensitive voicemail messages, why do I even care if I have my voicemail account password protected? Well, if you don't mind somebody listening to all your voicemails,
right.
If you don't mind people deleting your voicemails,
right.
If you don't mind people changing your greeting,
yes.
And if you don't mind people changing the password to your account, then just leave it open. No problem.
I'd have problems with all of that, and I'm sure you would too.
I'd have a lot of, because somebody can go in and change and add a password to your voicemail account that not even you can get in.
Exactly.
So that would be a big problem. So I would recommend that you put password on your voicemail. And actually, this is a big problem. People don't properly secure their voicemail accounts, and they put in like really stupid passwords like 1234, 111. And so you really need to have a password number sequence, if it uses numbers, that actually is harder to guess,
mm-hmm.
that not just
mm-hmm.
something really simple.
Right.
We got an email from Alex. He said, "I've been listening to news about I've been listening to news about voicemail hacking, but I'm also wondering about taking over your online account. You see, if you have like a Verizon account, like a Verizon Wireless account, it turns out that you actually could log on and you could pay your bills online."
Right.
And what you have to do though is you actually have to set up an account with Verizon in order to run that account. Now, if you actually have access to your account, you can see all of the phone numbers that you've called. You've got a complete phone log. So what happens is that many times vendors will allow you to provide all the secret information when you first log on, and you don't need much information to initially set up the account. Like, for instance, in the case of the Verizon account, if you set up a new Verizon account, you only need to know the billing zip code and the last four digits of the Social Security number. That's what you have to know. So if somebody has those two items,
they're in.
They could actually create an account for your voicemail and you'd have it. And that was also something that many reporters were doing. There's also a further problem. Like if you go to Kaiser Permanente, they've got these online medical accounts. The first time you set it up, you may need less information to actually log on. So I would recommend certainly for your phone account and for any online medical accounts to go ahead and set those up. Now, if it turns out that you try to set it up and somebody's already done it for you, then you want to call the support desk, and they'll ask for further verification, and they will then reset the thing for you. But those are two areas that, in particular, reporters were known to get access to without authorization,
mm-hmm.
medical records and phone records. We have an email from Alice. "I've heard so much about Facebook privacy. How can I make certain that I'm still protected? Thanks, Alice." Well, actually, that's a good question, Alice, because Facebook keeps changing the rules. So you think you've got your site locked up, and then bingo, they change the rules again. So let's run through how you actually do that. When you log on to Facebook, there's going to be in the upper right-hand corner a drop-down menu called Account. So then you go down to an area called Privacy Preferences and click on that. Now, you've got a couple of areas here in these privacy preferences. You've got the first part, which is called Connecting to Facebook. And this actually shows who can search your Facebook, who can send you requests, who can send you messages, who you can see on your friends list, who can see your education, what they can see on your profile. And you can set that up either for everyone, for friends only, or for friends of friends. So, you can basically make that as private as you want, but you need to go and check it, because the default is probably not what you would necessarily want. Then you've got the sharing on Facebook. And this is what information you're going to share, like your status, your bio, your family and relationships. And you've got a whole group of choices there. And you can have with everyone, friends of friends, or friends only. Or and under the contact information, for instance, if you put in your phone number, and this has been a problem, if you share your phone number with friends, then people who have access to your friends' accounts can also see your phone number. So on my phone number, I share it with me only. This mm-hmm. is an option. So for the case of the phone number, you actually have a choice of everyone, friends of friends, friends only, or me only. But they don't really give me only as an option. You have to go to what they call customize. And then when you customize it, then you've got choices of me only. So you've got to go through a whole other menu in order even to find me only. It's not on the drop-down menu. It's in the customize menu. Now, the biggest issue here that I think I have with their privacy is when we go down to the bottom left-hand corner of the privacy page, they call apps and websites. Now, it turns out that applications that somebody says, oh, can my application have access to your Facebook account? These applications skim off all your data and share it all over the place. So letting apps into your system really is something that you've got to be careful which apps are in there, and you really want to watch what they do with it. So you can go to and see which apps you've authorized, and you can edit those settings. And if you want, you can basically disable those apps or disconnect them from your Facebook account, and it tells you when they were set up. I just checked mine this morning, for instance. I found one app I didn't even know about.
Really?
So I just deleted it. I don't know where it came from. They have something called public search, where you might not want your website to show up on the public search. So you could block, you could either enable public search or disable public search. So if you're like somebody that just doesn't want your Facebook page showing up in the search engines, you want to disable that. Now, probably the sneakiest thing is what they call instant personalization. Now, all of these are under the section of apps and websites. Instant personalization actually sends your data to websites so that when you go there, they have all your data. Mm-hmm. So instant personalization sends all your data to Bing, to Pandora, to TripAdvisor, to Yelp, to Rotten Tomatoes, to Clicker. And this is probably the worst place to put it. So I'd definitely disable. In other words, you're going to unclick the enable button on instant personalization. Now, I think that that's probably the default setting, not enabled. But the problem is Facebook always changes their rules, and it might be disabled is the default today and enabled is the default tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it's worth going periodically to your privacy preferences and locking up your Facebook page. That was a great question, Alice.
I had an awkward Facebook moment this week. I have a Facebook page that I need to get rid of because uh-huh. I don't use it. Somebody friended me and I didn't respond, and I ran into them at a meeting and I kind of got this look. I said, it's not because I don't like you. It's because I don't use my Facebook. It needs to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
I know. That's the thing. Well, the thing is, you can friend them, and then you can unfriend them, and they won't know it.
I wasn't aware of that.
So you can friend them, and then the next day, unfriend them.
Oh.
So it'll show that they were friended, but then they won't be notified when they're unfriended.
Well, how do people figure out they've been unfriended? Did you used to be able to figure out that you were unfriended?
No. The only way they can figure it out is if they actually go to your Facebook page, and they can't see your data because they're not a friend.
Oh, that's how you figured that out.
So they only figure it out if they try to snoop around to find out what you're up to.
Interesting.
So,
wow.
So you could always play that game if you want to be Facebook cagey.
No, I just want to get off the thing. I want to get off the merry-go-round. Thank you.
All right. Well, we got an email from this was actually an email. This wasn't from Cameron. I'm a student at Northern Virginia Community College in Woodbridge. I'd like to know about transferring to Stratford University in Woodbridge. Do you accept credits from different universities? Is there a way I can send my transcripts to find out how it goes? Well, I thought I'd answer this question because this is a common problem that students have when they want to go from one school to another. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can transfer credits. Credits from any accredited institution transfer. So what you do in the case of Stratford, but you do this with any school, you send an email to admissions@stratford.edu. you can go in and talk to admissions. They can actually, there are normally people at the school, and I know Stratford has people, who can actually look at your courses, and they can show how they correspond to course requirements at Stratford, and you get a degree map. And then you'll know before you enroll in Stratford which of your courses are actually going to contribute to the degree. So there are really two issues. Will the credits transfer? And the second question is, will they contribute to the degree? And this was always one of the problems when students would say transfer from the community college to a four-year school. The four-year school say all your credits transfer. And then when you get there, they say, but unfortunately, they're not related to your degree.
Right.
So you end up having credits of no value. So you have to ask two questions. Do they transfer, and will they count toward the degree? So that's a very good question, Cameron, and just we hope to see you there at Stratford and Woodbridge.
Yep. We have a question from the studio audience, meaning me.
Yes.
Next week, this day, I'll be taking my daughter to University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where she'll be a freshman, and she needs to get a computer today. What would you suggest? Business major, and she wants a laptop.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, I think the one thing is I would get a smaller screen, a 15th or a 15-inch or a 14-inch screen, because it's much lighter. One of the big problems that students get when they want a laptop for school, they say, I want a big screen to watch movies, and they'll get one of these 17-inch screens or larger than 15-inch screens, and the darn laptop is heavy. So when they start lugging that laptop all around school, you discover after about 6 months, they buy another laptop that's smaller, and that's the one that they use all the time. So the weight of the thing is very important. And then if you got a small one, it just fits in your purse. You don't have to have a whole big item with it. So either 14-inch, 15-inch, or smaller would be fine. Now, I don't think you really need extended warranty because laptops actually they're either going to fail right away, and once you get out of that initial failure mode, it's just really not worth the money,
right,
even though the big box stores try to sell that to you. Now, you want a large hard drive because you actually don't know what at least 500 gigabytes. Now, the reason you want a large hard drive is that you really don't know what they're going to use it for, and more than likely, there are going to be some MP3s on it at some point.
Right.
And they'll use it to collect their MP3s. They'll end up with all these digital pictures. They'll put all sorts of digital stuff on it. They might want to download a movie from Netflix, and so they're going to really be unhappy with a small hard drive. So get at least a 500 gigabyte. Now they're even getting larger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that for a college student, I would recommend getting Carbonite or an automatic backup. That's only about $50 to $60 a year. One of the biggest tragedies at school is when somebody's laptop is stolen the week before the final.
Ugh.
I mean, think about this.
Yeah.
Laptop,
all your stuff is gone.
All your stuff is gone. Laptop theft is one of the biggest problems at college. I mean, if you just leave your laptop there, it's gone. And so if you have Carbonite, which, there are a number of automatic backup systems. They've got Carbonite. They've got Mosey. Get one of these, and then for only $60 a year, you can always restore it. So if your laptop's stolen, go down, get another laptop for $400, and that afternoon restore everything.
Right.
That, for a college student, I think is well worth the money, and it's certainly worth the money more so than an extended memory, extended warranty. So those would be the main items. I think almost everything. Of course, they all come with Wi-Fi. They all are pretty much standardized. You're going to want to get the Wi-Fi,
right,
which is going to be standard on the unit. If you want to get, I don't know if she's going to want these fingerprint detector things. I just don't think any of that's worth it.
Yeah.
Usually, what happens is that they'll get a laptop in college, and then in a year they're going to get another laptop.
Right.
Actually,
exactly.
So it's not worth getting some super duper.
Exactly.
Super duper, and get something get the extended battery.
Can I ask you about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, the thing about the battery life is really the key. You don't want to be tethered to a plug because you're gonna have to carry it around school. You're gonna go to the student union. You may want to do your homework out in the lawn. I mean, you don't want to always be at a plug.
Of course.
And so
when
it's a nice day, and so battery life is actually a big deal. That's another advantage of a smaller screen. The battery lasts longer, and you can get these units with larger batteries. You know, they weigh just a little bit more, but they're just a little thicker.
Right.
And then you get longer battery life. So those would be the things. So she should probably take the unit and kind of walk around and see how it feels.
Walk around the store, but don't walk out the front door.
Yeah, just walk it out and feels. If there's going to be a favorite bag that she likes to carry stuff around, mm-hmm. see how it fits in the bag, but don't walk out of the store with it in the bag.
Right.
And maybe you should tell the store clerk that you're just testing how it fits in the bag.
Maybe let her go do this all by herself. Yeah. She's gonna walk around with a laptop.
So that's my advice. I got a 17-inch unit, which I really like how it looks, and I lug this thing all around the world on travel.
Great.
And I'm never ever gonna get another 17-inch unit. It's too heavy.
It's too big.
It's too heavy. So this, I'm really giving her all of my mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wish I had a 14 or 15-inch unit.
There you go, field tested by the doc himself,
right.
Who's been to colleges everywhere, not just one. This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, which is heard on many of these fine radio stations, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stay with us. More tech news coming up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. You are listening to the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. The doc is away today. Jim Russ is sitting in for him, and now it is time for this.
Now it is time for...
While we were away, I took Mr. Big Voice aside, and I kicked his you-know-what.
That's right.
So
he needed it. He's right on the money now.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Well, today we're going to feature Azeem Premji. Are you familiar with Azeem Premji?
Well, we were going to get a flat near his place.
Yeah,
so,
that's
yeah,
right.
I'm
the chairman of Wipro, W-I-P-R-O. That's one of the largest software companies in India. It's considered to be the IBM of India. It's down in the southern part of India. Azeem Premji is the chairman of the board there, and and he's the one who's been responsible for its astronomical growth over the last 40 years. He was born July 24th, 1945, in Mumbai, India.
Craig's
Mumbai, of
there,
course, Mumbai used to be called Bombay.
Right.
And then they have the new name, Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
His father was M.H. Premji. He was a Muslim, and he was a businessman in Mumbai. Now, Azeem Premji completed his high school education at St. Mary's School in Mumbai, and then he entered Stanford University in the U.S., of course, in California, in electrical engineering. He finished his bachelor degree at Stanford and was unable to complete his graduate school because his father died in 1966, mm-hmm. and he had to return home at age 21 with a freshly minted BSEE, Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering, to take over his father's business. Now, his father was in the hydrogenated vegetable oil and fats business.
Interesting, which might explain a few things.
That's right. Yeah, maybe. That could be. Could have been a cholesterol problem there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because hydrogenated vegetable oils are it's not
That's
good for
you.
That has those have the saturated fats.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the name of the family business, of course, was Western India Vegetable a product company, which is which later became known as Wipro, W-I-P-R-O.
Uh-huh.
Now, Azeem repositioned Wipro into the consumer goods business, and he produced produced the cooking oils and the cooking fats. He also produced laundry soap, wax, and tin containers.
Interesting.
Then in 1975, he expanded. This was about 9 years after he took over. He expanded into Wipro Fluid Power, and he started manufacturing hydraulic and pneumatic cylinders for, fluids for those.
Sure.
And so he was really diversifying there in 75. Then in 1977, this was when India and the United States weren't getting along very well. Back, remember those times, India was more aligned with Russia, because India's roots back in the early roots were really tied to socialism in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got their independence, they really had a socialist charter. They've since become much more capitalistic as they have grown, and there's been a transformation. But back then, they were very socialistic and much more aligned with the Soviet Union than with the United States. And so, bingo, they kicked out IBM, which was the United States company in 77. Well, guess what? Wipro, the Western India Vegetable Product Company, was ready to step in for them and take over.
Exactly.
So in 1981, Wipro began selling computers, and it became the first computer maker in India. They subsequently got even into integrated circuits, and they made the first Indian 8086 chip.
Mm-hmm.
They probably licensed that technology from Intel. In the 80s, Wipro developed customized software for their hardware company, for their hardware customers, because they were delivering computers. And then the companies didn't have the software to run on, so they got into the software business, and which is sort of the evolution of what happened with IBM, too. In the 90s, Wipro moved offshore, and they started doing the outsourcing.
Ooh-hoo.
Which, of course, they did this, particularly outsourced jobs from the United States. Wipro expanded into IT services, R&D services, technology infrastructure services, and their biggie is business processing outsourcing, BPO. That's the big word in there. You know, BPO, that's like call centers. You might outsource your whole accounting department. All your business processes you outsource to India, and that's a huge, huge business over there. Wipro's technology infrastructure services is the largest Indian IT infrastructure service provider in terms of revenue, people, and customers. It has more than 200 customers in the U.S. and Europe and Japan, and over 650 customers in India. Wipro provides business processing outsourcing services in the areas, I mentioned this earlier, finance and accounting, procurement, HR services, loyalty services, that's customer service,
mm-hmm.
and knowledge services, maybe database mining. In 2002, Wipro acquired Spectramind and became one of the largest BPO service players, business processing outsourcing. BPO, that is a big word in India, I'm telling you. Everybody mm-hmm. talks about that. Now, Premji is known for his modesty and frugality in spite of his wealth. He drives a Toyota Corolla, and he always flies economy class on the airplane. Now, he prefers to stay in company guest houses rather than five-star luxury hotels that are
discussion, you're the luxury hotel guy.
Yeah, the thing is, Stratford doesn't have any guest houses. You know, actually, if we had a guest house in India, uh-huh. I would stay there.
Yeah.
But we don't have one.
Oh, well.
Now, Premji was recognized by Business Week as one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time for his vision and leadership at Wipro. I mean, he took a vegetable oil company...
And turned it into IBM.
To turn it into the IBM of India. Now, mm-hmm. that is a man with vision.
Yes.
Now, he set up the Azeem Premji Foundation. Now, the foundation is dedicated to the cause of elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this turns out to be, and later on I'm going to get into the demographic bonus in India, but this issue of elementary education is key because in the poorer areas of India, students tend to drop out of school to go work with their family farms or family businesses, and the retention rate, the completion rate of elementary school is very low. The teachers are not able to keep the kids there. There's such a pull on the part of the parents. And so India is not going to be able to solve all of their problems economically in terms of spreading the wealth to all people until they can get the kids to go through K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
So he is focused on this, and this, I have to agree, is one of the key issues in India. Now, 2 weeks ago, he accepted a Lifetime Achievement Award in technology. And this is only a couple of weeks ago. And I was interested sort of to get a sense of the man. And this is what he said in his acceptance speech. Build your organization that is grounded on values and practice these values with on a no-exception basis. Integrity is the biggest value.
Mm-hmm.
And I think working in India and in Asia, there are so many people that might try to shave off a little bit on the integrity. But the companies that really do well are the ones that honor that, and they're the ones that grow and have people who remain loyal to them. Premji is married to Yasmin. They have two children. He's a member of the Prime Minister's Advisory Council for IT in India. Azim Premji was rated as the richest person in India from 1999 to 2005. Now, his wealth in 2006 was estimated at $14.8 billion.
Oof.
But at that point, he dropped to the fifth richest person in India. But, you know, with $14.8 billion, you know, it's not that.
You don't really have a whole lot. That's because he drives a Corolla and flies business class that he's worth that much money.
No, drives an economy class. Flies economy class.
Right. What did I say?
Business class.
Economy.
He flies economy class. Yeah, he doesn't. He's not really into money.
We are not into money here. We are into free food. So when we come back, we'll have your chance to win some with the pop quiz. Hope you're paying attention to what we were just talking about there in Profiles in IT, because that information could win you a free lunch. Coming up next on the Best of Tech Talk, which is heard weekly on these radio stations, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. The number to call in just a moment is 877-936-9333. Stand by. More of the Best of Tech Talk comes back right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Russ, sitting in for the doc today, who is way on business. So we're going to take care of some business right now by asking you the following question. The pop quiz for today, and if you get the answer correctly, you will win a set of free tickets for fine dining at the Escafia at Stratford University in Falls Church or Cafe Kareem in the Woodbridge facility. Our question today is, we just spoke about Azim Premji mere moments ago, who is the chairman of Wipro, which is considered to be the IBM of India. But the Western India Vegetable Product Company did not start off as a high-tech firm. What did Wipro initially sell? If you have the answer to that question, call us right now on the hotline, 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, that number to call, if you know the answer to the pop quiz question, what did Wipro sell initially? Call us right now at 877-936-9333. This is the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio.
Hackers,
yes,
are uploading their code to Microsoft before they release the virus in the wild.
Hmm.
You know, why do you think they would want to do that?
Like a testing ground?
It really makes no sense. No. Why would you want to tell Microsoft what you were doing so they could create
because they will go and create a patch.
Fix it. Okay, this is what happens. Because, you know, hackers are not necessarily the brightest bulbs on the block. When hackers are developing their virus, you know, and they're writing the code and they're writing it in Windows, they keep crashing their computer because the code has errors in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is that when the computer crashes, you get this prompt that says, would you like to send the details of the crash to Microsoft so they could analyze it? And many of the hackers say yes. So the code that they're writing, when it crashes, is all sent to Microsoft. You'd think they would say no.
Well, you'd think they'd be smarter than that.
Yeah, but and the people that are, the guy Heckman who's with Microsoft, he's one of the senior security architects. He says people have sent their virus code when they're trying to develop the virus, and they keep crashing the system. Send us the code over and over again, and then we can see the code getting better as they start writing,
mm-hmm.
getting rid of the crashes. And it's amazing, he said, how much stuff they get. He was making a presentation at the Microsoft Tech Ed 2010 conference and the session on Hacking Day, and he gave the delegates the top five hacking methods and the best methods for developers to avoid falling victim to them. Now, he said the number of attacks at Microsoft website is really quite high. He said the first thing that a script kiddie does whenever they get something that they want to try is they fire it off at Microsoft.com to see if it works. He says, on average, Microsoft.com gets attacked between 7,000 and 9,000 times a second.
Wow.
Think about that. Between 7,000 and 9,000 times a second.
A lot of people out there doing really bad things.
Yeah. And he says, now, most of the hacks focus on two things, cross-site scripting and SQL injection. And that hasn't changed in the past 6 years. He says, what does that tell us? He says, the bad guys, you know, once they learn how to do something, they'll like to keep doing it. And the developers haven't learned.
Mm-hmm.
So they still have those vulnerabilities in their system. Just to give you an idea of SQL injection, you know, just what that means is, suppose I am somebody's asking me for my name and address and I'm filling out a form. That name and address goes into a database, an SQL database. So instead of writing my name, I put in a bunch of control characters that actually are SQL commands, and I make it very long, and so then it goes beyond the buffer size that's reserved for the normal name, and all of these extra commands go right into memory, and they're executed.
Hmm.
So I inject SQL commands into the system, and then it crashes the system, and I get control. And that SQL injection is one of the most common ways to do hacking. So he said developers should really consider these five top things, and you know, cross-site scripting, SQL injection when they write their code. But the thing that amazed me was that hackers are sending their code to Microsoft and that they get between 7 and 9,000 per second. Now, we talked earlier about the iPad killing laptop sales. Let's get this specific here. According to Best Buy, laptop sales are off by as much as 50%. He said that internal research showed that half of the potential laptop buyers have chosen an iPad instead of the traditional laptop.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I brought in the iPad here. Marianne has an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
did she win this? Like she said,
yeah, she won this. I wouldn't buy it. I mean, this is $550. I mean, it costs more than a laptop. But the thing is, it has Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Wi-Fi, you can basically, you know, if you're traveling, you can log on to the Wi-Fi network in the room. You can check your email. You can surf the web. The only thing that the iPad doesn't do, it doesn't support Flash, which really I don't like because so many websites have Flash. But actually, if all you're going to do is surf the web and get emails, this iPad is actually all you need. Plus, I can store songs on it, so you've got... you know, you can listen to music, you can surf the web, you can check your email. What else do you need? So why haul around a big laptop? The other nice thing about the iPad, they don't make you take it out of your briefcase. You can just leave it in there when you go through security.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it's I don't know why. Because it doesn't look like a computer, I guess. And it's I don't know.
Oh,
you
catch
just
on.
You don't. I mean, they'll eventually make you take it out. And I guess you could hide it in your suitcase, and it wouldn't get stolen because people wouldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really it's really much more convenient to travel with than a laptop.
That's another thing. You really got to be careful with your eye stuff when you travel, don't you?
All my electronic stuff, I hold it. I never check it because. Mm-hmm. When you check it, it could just get lost in baggage when it's transferred.
Quote unquote, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, pigeons have won the broadband race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, broadband, of course, is a reference to high bandwidth internet, and the question is how much data can you transfer over a fiber optic channel or a line pair, and the amount of data you have, the broader the band, the broader the frequency band you can shove the data through, the higher the bits per second that you can send. Well, they're basically in the old days when they wanted to send data, the Romans used carrier pigeons.
We were just talking about
that. Yeah, so they basically had a broadband contest in Yorkshire Farm. This is a city in the UK, and they were complaining that their city didn't have enough broadband capability. So what they did, they got 10 pigeons, and they tied a USB to the leg of each of the 10 pigeons. And then they released them. And these pigeons flew for an hour and a quarter to Skykness, which was a town 120 kilometers away.
Mm-hmm.
They delivered their 10 USBs. They copied the USBs onto the computer and had the complete file. It was completely transferred by the 10 pigeons. Yet only 24% of the 300 megabyte file had been uploaded over the internet. So the pigeons had four times the bandwidth of the of the internet connection to Yorkshire Farm.
Now, this is interesting. How did the pigeons know where they were going? Did they give them a GPS or something like that?
These are homing pigeons.
Oh, okay.
So they probably were raised at Skykness,
uh-huh.
And they just went home.
Went home. Got it.
So they just went home. So these pigeons were expected to complete the 120 kilometer journey in around 2 hours, that would be about 2 hours, wouldn't it be?
They must have had a tailwind or something.
It was an hour and a quarter later. Yeah, they must have had a tailwind. So this was this is always a common stunt. Maybe we should have a pigeon broadband contest here, but. I don't know. I think they got a pretty slow connection. They only uploaded 1/4 of a 300 megabyte file in an hour.
That's pretty funny.
In an hour 20 minutes. So there you go, the pigeon broadband race.
Thank you for listening. This is the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We got more stuff coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You are listening to the best of Tech Talk.
I sort of alluded to the fact that there's almost a religious battle going on in the data warehousing area.
Yes.
It's kind of like PC versus Apple. And it's the top-down people versus the bottom-up people.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Inmom is the top-down person. It's the top-down paradigm. And Ralph Kimball is the bottom-up paradigm. Now, these are the differences. If you take the top-down paradigm advocated by Bill Inmom, he says data warehouse, he believes data warehouse is part of an overall business strategy and that the enterprise only has one data warehouse. And that all the data marts, in other words, all the different departments, should derive their data information from that centralized warehouse. So Inmom's vision of the data warehouse is that at the center is that the data warehouse is the center of what he calls the corporate information factory, which provides a logical framework for delivering business intelligence and business management capabilities. Now, he favors that the information be stored in a very efficient format, which is basically a normalized format. It's the what he called the third normal form, which basically eliminates duplicate fields. So you don't have a lot of duplication in the fields, and it's the most efficient way to store data. It's not the easiest way to access it because you've got a join of a lot of tables, but it's very efficient to store it that way. Now, the main disadvantage of this top-down methodology that Inmom advocates is that it's very expensive, and by the time you get it done, there could be a big delay before you get anything useful out of it, and really only the very largest companies could do that. On the other hand, Ralph Kimball has the bottom-up approach. He says every department just creates their own mini data warehouse that they call a data mart. Kimball says, you know, you let sales get theirs, you let production get theirs, you let marketing get theirs, and then you simply connect these various data marts with what he's calling a data bus. A data bus architecture where you have standardized data formats that allow these systems to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So the data bus could be something called something like middleware. Now, the advantage of this method is that you can get started right away. I mean, you don't have to wait for this huge, huge enterprise system. You can get started department by department and link them together through a standardized structure. Now, he believes that the data should be stored in a way that's easy for the users to get at. He doesn't really go for this third normal form that requires so many table joins and it's more complicated for users to get at. So he says organize the data in a way that links together the fields that a user would normally have and normally need at once, all in the same table. And so you're basically denormalizing it. So that means that certain fields are repeated multiple times wherever they're needed. This particular structure and the structure that he favors is the star schema, which is just a way to logically relate the facts from the what he calls the dimensions, which are other elements of data that the user might need. So he basically favors the star schema, which is denormalized rather than normalized. And so he says, but the key is to make this useful. You have to have tight management over the data warehouse bus, otherwise they can't be talked. In fact, there's probably a combination of both that goes on. Both ideas are really quite good. You do need a broad enterprise view, even when you're starting a bottom-up development, because you want to get, ultimately, the systems all linked together. So probably most companies are doing kind of a hybrid of the two. So, but this is the big battle. Are you an Inmom top-down guy or a Kimball bottom-up guy?
Which do you like?
I kind of like the bottom-up.
Yeah.
I kind of like the bottom up. You sort of grows rather than this big, big software project kind of approach.
Top down seems kind of forced.
Yeah, I'd rather have a bottom up with some top down insight to guide it, but really develop it from a bottom up point of view.
This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Learn more about this show by going to our website, techtalkonline.com. From there, you can learn all about what we do here. You can see outlines for all of our previous shows and listen to MP3s of our favorite of our previous shows, all of them. You can also go to Apple iTunes and add us there, and you'll get updated regularly with new episodes of Tech Talk. You can also learn more about Stratford University by going to the website, stratford.edu. We'll be back with more on the Best of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You are listening to the best of Tech Talk.
Social media users over 50 are the fastest growing web demographic.
Wow.
This is interesting. Social media users, social media is Facebook, and older are the fastest growing demographic that are as shown by a new Pew study. Last year, social networking among 50-plus internet users nearly doubled from 25 to 47%, according to the Pew study, compared to an increase of 10 percentage points among users 18 to 29. The membership level is now at 86% in that category. Now, the Troy, Michigan Senior Computing Learning Center has seen an increased demand this year as what they call the digital holdouts face pressure from family and friends to make the leap into Facebook.
Nice.
If they want to know what's going on in their grandkids' lives, they have to text or log on to Facebook.
Oh, I thought they were looking for dates or something.
No. Well, that might be part of, they don't want to talk about that.
Okay. We
now,
won't go there.
Now, some express concern over infringing on their children's personal lives because if you friend your child or your grandchild, they think it's akin to snooping. But actually, privacy controls, this is the thing, allow you to decide which group of friends see what. So kids can have certain updates that they keep from their parents and other updates that go to their other friends.
Mm-hmm.
But you've really got to manage that carefully because there could be a problem if you got a little confused as what group you were connecting to. Now, people who are not on sites like Facebook can feel excluded from sharing family news and photos because that happens all the time. And so there is this huge, huge pressure to get onto Facebook. And, of course, the problem is a friend of a friend of a friend can see what you have, so you've got to be very careful on your privacy issues. There was one child that said they didn't mind their mother getting being a friend on Facebook because then they didn't have to tell mom what was going on. They just posted everything to Facebook, and then mom could figure it all out on her own.
This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Stand by. More coming up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is the best of Tech Talk.
And let's talk about Einstein's theory.
It's
been verified yet again. It's kind of an interesting, fun experiment. Scientists have demonstrated the true natures of Einstein's theory for the first time with incredibly accurate atomic clocks that can keep time to within 1 second in about 3.7 billion years. Now, James Chin Wen Chow and his colleagues at the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, out in Boulder, Colorado. NIST is headquartered up in Gaithersburg,
yep.
but they've got an extension out there in Boulder, Colorado. They found that when they monitored two such clocks positioned a foot apart, one was 1 foot higher than the other, they found that time really does move more quickly the higher you are, just as Einstein predicted.
Interesting.
So as you move up, time goes faster because you have less gravity due to the Earth as you get away from the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
What they measured, they found if you move up 1 foot, that over a 79-year period, the clock, which is 1 foot higher, will actually age 90 billionths of a second more than the lower clock over 79 years. So let's say you are 6 feet tall.
Right.
That means your head over a 79-year lifetime is going to age 540 billionths of a second more than your feet.
It's only slightly so.
It's a very small effect. And then it's also cause for the twin paradox. If one twin leaves the Earth and comes back, he's actually older than the one that stayed here.
Interesting.
So you could have two twins were born at the same time that actually end up having different ages.
I wonder if there are any astronauts that were twins.
I don't know. But they've actually measured this effect on shuttles and all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is what Einstein realized. His insight here is that he said when you're falling, you don't feel gravity. When you're accelerating, gravity goes away. So he said, conceptually, acceleration and gravity are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that special relativity predicted that if you're accelerating, time changes at a different rate. Therefore, if gravity is the same as acceleration, that as you get closer to a gravitational force, in fact, time should change.
Mm-hmm.
So it really made sense.
We try to make sense here on Tech Talk, and we'll try to make more sense next week right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HT2, 1035 FM HT2. Learn more about us on the web at techtalkonline.com and also more about Stratford University by going to their website, stratford.edu. We will see you next week here on Tech Talk Radio.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers.